Welcome to Jeff and Jamie Feed. I am so excited to be hanging out with you again.
This is going to be great because we are diving into a conversation today with Kyle Johnson, who, you know, you talk about mission-driven businesses, and rarely can you see that happen in restaurants, but he's got one of those.
Every time I see Kyle, I'm like, wow, I'm not doing enough.
You're not, because, you know, it's funny because the restaurant business has changed a lot over the years. I think when we first started, the idea of a chef and what a chef did or restaurant owners did, it's morphed a lot. And when we went on a trip up to the James Beard platform for that special dinner up there, we found we got up and worked out. And on our way back to the, Kyle had already worked out on our, as we were leaving, you know, and there were other chefs going for a run.
Where's the gym?
Yes, where's the gym? He had already been there. Just really cool to see how I think chefs are evolving in terms of finding balance in life. And not only is he putting out incredible food, he's James Beard nominated, but also doing an incredible job with giving back to the community too.
Yeah, he's amazing. And we're trying to sabotage him a little bit with some homemade soft serve.
We just made him eat a bunch of homemade soft serve.
But as he's getting that little treat, I think it's time to bring him on the show.
I love it. Welcome on, Kyle. We are so glad to have you here with us today. And I cannot wait to dive into your story because you are truly having a huge impact on this city in so many different ways. And I would love for people to just get a background on Community Matters Cafe, when you got involved with it. And because I think it was from the beginning,
yeah,
right? And how it kind of came about.
Yeah. So, well, one, thank you all so much for having me on.
We're so glad to have you.
Always lovely seeing you all. So Community Matters Cafe came about from the Charlotte Rescue Mission. Charlotte Rescue Mission is a Christian nonprofit that's been around. I think we celebrate our 87th year this year.
Wow.
In Uptown. And it came about really just from seeing the need of doing more in the community for those who are going through active addiction and trying to reach a consistent place of sobriety as a lifestyle. But beyond just sobriety, living freely. In a healthy way and being a contributing member of society. And so in 2017, Charlotte Rescue Mission saw that a lot of the men and women that were going into their program, a large percent of them were not having long-lasting sobriety. They were relapsing within the first 6 months to a year. And they, when they just did the research of it, they recognized that so many of them did not have the skill set. Like they... Our program is 4.5 months where they're living within the facility, the men's shelter, the women's shelter of living in sobriety. And then it was like they left and it's like they're back into a world now that was not built for them.
It's the same world. They're there with the same family, same friends and same maybe non-supportive group.
Yeah. Same temptations.
Same temptations.
Yeah. So they live 4.5 months of living in this like oasis and then were thrown back in and it's kind of like, we'll figure it out.
That's where you come in.
That's where the Community Matters comes in. So our president and CEO at the time, Tony Marciano, who's now retired, saw that need. And the space that the cafe is in, we've owned for years. That building's like 120 years old, mm-hmm. I believe, old textile mill. And so
that's perfect.
We love those old buildings, yeah. But yeah.
Charlotte
it is
loves
so
those old
cute.
Buildings.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 So he kind of saw that and he's like, we need to do something with this. And so he had the idea, him and a couple other team members had the idea of like, if we built a restaurant or a coffee shop and we're able to teach them these life skills, be able to control their stressors, their triggers, being able to work on their communication skills, conflict resolution, all these aspects that they either never gained or never had during their time of active addiction under our site while they practice working at the same time and getting acclimated back into the community. This will give them a better chance. So he entered into this kind of nonprofit, local nonprofit shark tank called, I always get it wrong, I think it's C21, either C21 or C23. And where you pitch your idea and then you can have these, have different businesses donate you money for like a capital campaign. And he got third place for pitching the idea of the cafe, which I think was $1,000. And he basically used that and flipped it to push a larger capital campaign and an insurance group, assurance collective called Community Matters, loved what we were idea of what we wanted to do so much, they donated us $1 million.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That they were going to pay out over 5 years.
Okay.
And for the success of the cafe. And so that's what our name comes that's, from, actually.
I is didn't know Cafe. That.
Most
that's
people don't.
Incredible.
And they do not publicize themselves very much. They are really just in the background. They do a lot of great work in the community and in Charlotte and the rest of North Carolina. So that's what our namesake comes from. Yeah.
So oh, when so somebody cool. takes that step out of, you know, I'll say the bubble of being in, you know, a safe space, and then they step out into working at your restaurants, do they remain residents at that, at the facility for recovery, and they're working with you all, or how long do they work with you all, or can they work for an indefinite amount of time?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So, quick answer is, so they do their 4.5 months of core programming, okay. which is they're at our men's shelter, Rebound, and our women's shelter, Dove's Nest. And after they finish that, they graduate that program. And then they're getting all everything needs they met. You know, they're going through detox. They're going through psychiatry, therapy, counseling. They're learning group processes of things. So group therapy as well as individual therapy. They get their own counselor. They meeting mentors, all of that. After they finish that, we have other extension programs. So our life skills program, which is the umbrella of the cafe program, is one of them. We also have a maintenance program. We have something called Keys program, which is where they can finish their high school diploma and then get their associates. And then we give them different scholarships. And we find different That's scholarships amazing. Where if they want more, they can get their bachelor's as well.
So cool. But the kitchen skills are what I know well. And I think both of us know that if you can prep, or you can wash dishes, or you can work a cook line, you can go anywhere in the country and walk in and get a job in a day or two.
Yeah. And so I think that's one of the biggest reasons of why the idea of the cafe was so alluring to us, and why it was such a big need. Cause it's like a lot of these men and women are either coming from the prison system or from homelessness. And the majority of them only have, you know, blue collar working skills. Mm-hmm. So giving them something where they can still build on their societal education of how to maneuver. They also have these hard skills of like, they can go and work at a restaurant and serve and wait. Cause every student that comes to our program, they're in our program for 6 months. Mm-hmm. So through those 6 months, they'll rotate throughout every part of the restaurant. Mm-hmm. All of our full-time staff have been trained in these. The life skills is actual like classroom.
Okay.
Class that they take.
Okay. Yep.
So every student goes through it. All the staff have been trained in it. And every staff member can walk them through that. And inevitable stressors happen working in a restaurant, obviously.
For sure.
And
they'll feel it. It's a good test ground.
Yeah. Yes. We are still a full service restaurant and coffee shop. And, you know, we still get customers that aren't the nicest. And we still have to, you know, sometimes deal with high and low emotions from our coworkers and whatnot, or just the day-to-day problems that happen in restaurants. Oh, the vendor forgot to bring this, and now we don't have this for the event. You know, once or twice.
So, but I think it's so incredible that not only have you created this whole structure and program of healing people and giving them a chance, but you're doing it at this level of food and culinary that, I mean, people can only dream of. And I mean, you're leading all of that. And it's awing what you're doing in general, helping those people, but doing it at that kind of level where they're seeing what great food can be. What do you attribute that to? Like, how are you able to achieve that?
I give a lot of it to my direct boss, Ashley Anna Hovis, who's our cafe director. When she took over, because when I came in, I was just a line cook. And she was the executive pastry chef, actually. And so when she took over as the cafe director and I got moved up to executive chef, her vision of what we had the potential of doing with these men and women, like moving beyond what their capabilities spoke at the moment when they came in, and saying that let's put them in a position to where they find out that they can't do it instead of just assuming that they can't do something.
Yeah, because you guys aren't opening things from a package and sticking it in the microwave.
No, we're everything we're making from scratch. From our syrups, from even our teas, we buy our teas from a farm out in Kannapolis, who dry the leaves and send them to us. You know, they're making all their syrups in the coffee shop. All my food, obviously, like I have a great relationship with a lot of farmers here in Charlotte and North Carolina area. So we're doing it the right way. My background is fine dining. I've started culinary school when I was 12. So the foundations of what we tried to build on, and what Ashley and especially saw vision wise of what we could do, you know, has really brought us to the place where we are now, where every one of these students come in and they learn more than just the fundamentals of cooking. They learn the excellence level of it, and also have the ability to work in a safe space where people can be patient with them, where they have the freedom to make mistakes and to still recover from them and keep growing.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's got to help them on the home front too, because I'm sure a lot of these people are missing the skills to cook for themselves and make meals and do a lot of things from scratch. So it's probably making them healthier because they're probably cooking great meals for themselves and
they learn
all of that. Comes together.
Well, and I think that the expectation thing that you're talking about, where, you know, don't assume that they can't, let's figure out that they can, and they can learn, and breaking down those barriers of saying, because a lot of people who come from broken past, maybe they just haven't been given high expectations and they haven't had high expectations of themselves. So they're thinking about themselves that they only deserve this and they only belong here. But it's amazing how you can use culinary to lift them up and see, yes, you deserve fresh eggs. You can work with fresh eggs. Here's how you butcher something properly. Here's how you can assemble something beautiful for yourself. And that just increases their expectations. And I would think spreads across their whole life.
It does. And, you know, one of our taglines that we're kind of become famous for using is to restore hope. You know, one of the biggest things that we've seen through these men and women when they come to us is they're hopeless. Like, this was their last chance to make their life work. And I think also, like, just like kind of like really seeing it for what it is, most like the average age of the woman in our program when they first start experimenting with drugs and alcohol is about 7. The average age for the men is about 9 or 10. The average age when the women become addicts being that they need a substance to be able to function in their day-to-day life, is about 13, and the men about 15. The average age that they come to us in our program for the woman is like 36, and the men like 40. So they've had 20-plus years of active addiction by the time they've come to us, or dealing with homelessness, or in and out of the prison system, or foster care, or whatever it may be. And so their life has literally been filled with just, like, getting to their next high just to survive. So being able to restore that sense of hope, their sense of worth, worth in themselves, worth in the community, you know, is the biggest thing. Like, sure, are you great at flipping eggs? Are you great at, you know, serving a section? Are you great at being a barista? That's awesome. But do you now have the confidence in yourself that no matter what you're doing or not doing, that you are worth love, you are worth self-care, you are worth to be treated humanely? And once they have that, they can do anything.
That's just incredible. And like when, you know, I think about, you know, we have restaurants and there's the restaurant community in Charlotte. I just am in love with. I love, you know, the chefs and owners around this city. I think we're so lucky to have such a great group of people. Are there things that restaurants outside of Community Matters can do to support you guys besides going there to dine? Like, do you have job programs that help feed people out to other restaurants or anything like that so that you can continue to filter in new people through the Community Matters program?
We do. So we've gone through a couple of different ones. Throughout the pandemic, we did a lot of partnerships with our organizations to send out meals to different homeless shelters. So they would donate us money and we would cook them out. We've had partnerships with other restaurants and organizations. So like Ruth's Chris was a big one. Yeah. They made an agreement with us basically that they would hire any of our students right from graduation. And then obviously through like Rebound and Dove's Nest, a lot of volunteer opportunities through that for former graduates of the program and just anybody to come in and to be able to support. And then kind of like how you mentioned, you know, even just buying as a nonprofit, all the money that comes to the restaurant goes directly back into our students. They pay for nothing while they're here, by the way.
Yeah.
We take care of their housing. They live at this other organization called Hope Haven, which is another great nonprofit in the city. We take care of all their travel and expense, legal, medical fees, childcare, if need be, to where they can fully focus on their recovery while they're with us.
Wow. Such a team effort, too.
It sure is. And do you feel like there's anything about Charlotte that allows it to work well here? Or do you feel, are there things like this in other cities, too, where they have these kind of programs? Is there, why does it work in Charlotte? Because it feels like it's working for you and you're making a huge difference through it.
You know, to our knowledge, I hope we're not the only place in the country, but to what we know, we're the only place in the country that is a full running coffee shop and restaurant that is part of a rescue mission that is completely free for the residents that join in. There's one other one that's similar that is has a couple of different locations called Cafe Momentum, but that's specifically towards teenagers. Ours is 18 and up. And I think the reason why it specifically works in Charlotte is, one, Charlotte, as we all know, is one of the largest growing cities in the country right now. I think people are actively looking to always give back in some capacity. I think it's a very, you know, with the banking and the tech world that's here, I think it's a very hustle and bustle 9-to-5 city. And I think people want to find ways to be able to give back. And but they're looking for ways that make sense or that fits into their schedule and that's easy. And we're one of those things. I think it just works with that. And on top of, you know, the connection that we have with other chefs in the city, you know, the fact that they come here and they do get really good food and really good service and really good coffee. So the support's not hard, but I think it's also easy to find when we're looking for it and we just kind of pop out.
So I think one of our biggest challenges is, of course, you know, we have a lot of people who've stayed with us, but there's also turnover in this business and, you know, keeping people trained up so that you can put out that high quality food and drink. How do you manage that when you probably have a good bit of turnover just because people are leaving the program? How do you make sure that you're able to maintain those standards? Because that feels like it takes our problem to like the nth degree.
Well, I have to give most of the credit of that to Ashley Anna. Ashley Anna's ex-military. And so her organizational skills, her system building, that now is like, we talk about her color-coded spreadsheets for everything. And we don't even think about it like anymore. It's just become second nature. Then also I have to attribute to my staff that we have in the kitchen. You know, I was a kid basically when we started there. I was 22 when I started the cafe.
Yeah.
And my first year executive chef was 23. And my staff now, so I have a very small staff because we fill everything out with students. My sous chef, who's been with me for 3 years now, was the sous chef on the opening team of Lee and Louise, Shea Carter. And then my pastry chef was my very first intern. She was an 18-year-old JWoo student when I was 23, and she stuck with us.
That's so cool.
My lead line cook was my one of my second interns, I think, that I had. And same thing. 18, 19-year-old with JWoo and has just stuck with us. And then my head prep cook, she was actually in another program for refugees and didn't even speak English like the first 3 months with us and has been my longest standing employee for the last 6 years.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
And, you know, having that consistency of a team that's sold and bought in, because what we do is hard. Like restaurants are already hard enough.
For sure. That's what blows my mind.
Yeah. And you guys are doing a great job. You're training new staff all the time. Let's talk about some of the accolades you've gotten, because you've gotten some pretty cool awards, right?
I'm not good at talking about myself like that, so I'll let y'all say that.
Well, he's a James Beard nominated chef, coming from a restaurant like that, that has like this whole other mission. That's what I think is so amazing, is that you're able to do these wonderful things for the community and then have that. I mean, how does it feel to be at that level as a chef? You're an executive chef over there. And
I mean, it was, I'd be lying to not say that it was really cool and it was surreal. You know, I said earlier, you know, I start culinary school when I was 12. And so I've really been entrenched in the game of restaurants and hospitality as a kid. Culinary school I went to was very intense as a kid. It was like funded by Emeril Lagasse. I worked on Emeril Lagasse's events at volunteers for years. You know, I worked at James Beard restaurants in New Orleans, was trained by the third most James Beard nominated chef of all time.
Wow.
And Frank Brightson. And that's before I even turned 18. I want to get a James Beard award one day. And my whole ideology of my career path was, you know, to do that standard route of being a line cook, being lead line cook and sous chef and chef de cuisine, executive chef, and then owning a place and then, you know, getting James Beard and Michelin's and all that. And then the cafe came about, and that's a longer story that I'm not going to completely go into. But, you know, I sold in when it didn't seem like it was a good career move to sell into, like, taking a demotion. Taking a pay cut to go and work at the cafe.
You're leaving fine dining.
And I left fine dining.
Going to the cafe.
And I'm like, and I felt called for it.
And then you're the one getting the James Beard nomination.
How ironic. So was it really just a gut feel? Like you just felt called to move into something like
that? Yeah. I tell people it was the first time I feel like God ever talked to me was to drop what I was doing and work. I'd like to tell this part. My father's a financial advisor and he's always like, he's my financial advisor. So there's two versions of my dad. When I'm talking to my dad and then when I'm talking to my financial advisor.
Yes.
And when I told him like, hey, dad, I was a sous chef at the Asbury at the time. This was 2018. Yeah. And so I was like, dad, I just like did a little visit at this restaurant. This is what they do. I think I'm going to take the job. This is what they're going to pay me. And so he's like, oh, Kyle, that's amazing. Like, I'm so proud of you. That's really cool. Can I talk to you as your financial advisor real quick? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, Kyle, this is not a good idea. You really shouldn't do this. You're going to probably start dipping into your savings by month four, month five. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I understand, but you know, I think I've built, enough, respect in the city, from what I do, even in the short amount of time to where if this doesn't work out, I can't go into something else. Like it's, and I was 22. I think I just turned 22.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's not the end of the world if this doesn't work, but I want to try this. And I did. And that first year was hard. Like that was my first time being on, I started the week that we opened. So like it was hard seeing that when it was like, you know, I'm seeing like how much food we're not selling every single day.
Right.
I see this like, there's a decently sized space when I see only 30 people came in for the day. And then slowly, you know, we start to pick up.
You guys are a little off the beaten track location-wise, especially.
But it's not great. Now, yeah, I was going to say.
Three or 4 years ago, I think the city's growing fast enough that you guys are going to be the mix very, very
soon. It's hard to beat our parking.
Yeah.
Yes, you've got great parking. And you're right there on the side of Uptown. You're like, you're so close to it. So what does your team and you think about growth? Like, as you look forward into the future, are you looking at growing the concept? Are you looking at growing the number of people fed through other locations? What's on your mind as far as that goes?
So it has something we have looked at in the past of growth. And I think that is something that's still a possibility. And honestly, it's kind of been a blessing that in those other moments where we did have that opportunity to grow and expand, that didn't work out because it was like, it would have been a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just excited. I'm like, oh yeah, let's do it. So I think right now it's about perfecting what we have with our staff and with the students that are coming through the program and just like fine tuning all those things. Cause I feel like we're really close to being like, this is where my perfectionism is at, to being really, really good.
You guys are already really good.
You were pretty good already, but to where it's like this seamless machine. I think from there, when an opportunity comes to do it. Yeah. But I think we're not actively looking, but I think if it does come, it's not something that we're against. And then our biggest hope is that people model this after us. I want to see other cities taking this idea and concept.
So you don't necessarily have to do it, but you're like, hey guys, this is the way. Like,
Like if y'all see another church y'all can buy and streamline another students of the rescue mission through that, by all means. But you know, if we're able to do that and we have the opportunity 100%, but I want to see a Community Matters Cafe style place in every city in America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully someone's listening out there.
I know. Well, it's funny. I have somebody that I wanted to get you in touch with, and the email to you came back to me. So I've got to retry again because he's got something that he feels like may be a good fit because he's helping. It's an organization called What's Next, and they help young men in high school who some are homeless, some are, you know, having a difficult time trying to get them on a career track and help them get through high school and get to a good spot. You know, some of them don't have parents or been living on the street, and they do a great job. But I feel like there are so many synergies there because he's talked to me about the idea of getting these boys, you know, on a path towards having a career. And culinary is a big part because they're trying to teach. They have a kitchen there where they're trying to teach them how to cook for themselves. Because like you were saying, Jeff, that's such a life skill that if you don't learn it from your home, you just are going to eat fast food you don't learn how to eat anything other than what's out of a box or what's, you know, at a fast food joint.
Yeah. That's awesome though. Not them eating out of fast food box, the What's Next.
Yes. Yes, for sure. So tell me like day in the life of you, like are you training? Are you, how is your role there? Are you overseeing? What does a day look like for you where you're doing a whole bunch of different tasks?
Yeah. So, as executive chef, so our days usually, I usually get there around 6 o'clock on busy, busy days or days I know it's going to be busy. Like I get there at like 5:30. So we open at 7:00. So me and my team, full-time staff help open up. You know, a lot of it is, you know, just setting up for service in the beginning parts of the day. And then when our residents and students come in, it's about, you know, getting them back into their systems, making sure that whatever we train them, whatever department they're in, whatever section they're in, whether they're in dish, they're on the line, they're in prep, they're serving. So for me specifically, like, you know, prep, the line, dish, pastry, we're setting them up and making sure that they're starting to work that continuous standard. Right, getting those repetitions in to where something becomes muscle memory for them. So I have other staff, obviously, in other departments, so it's not just me doing it, but I'm usually overseeing my staff, doing it with the students, or directly doing it myself. And then throughout the day, service starts, and it's literally just like, as the day goes.
Let's
like,
go.
Okay, let's go. You messed up here. All right, let's walk through that problem, what it was. It can be, we can be 30 tickets deep. Our dining room sits 90, or outside sits 40, and our coffee shop can fit an innumerable amount of people. And then we also have to go and we do catering. So it can be a full house going, and we can have a student in the back that is having a rough time emotionally, mentally, panic attack, you name it. And I'm going to pause what I'm doing and be like, hey, we're going to deal with this. Where are you going? What are your 4 C's of communication? Let's problem solve this. What are our conflict resolution skills in dealing with this issue and situation? And then, okay, life is still going on, so let's get back to it.
Like, what skills you're teaching right there. I mean, it's just amazing the way you communicate and handle that stuff.
Yeah, you're teaching them how to cope. Like, yeah. I know our chefs are having to deal with this kind of stuff too, but yours is just brought to a different level. Yeah. But so do you have to go through training yourself on how to coach and how to, I guess, use the same terms that maybe they're using in their programming so that they're kind of, I don't know, connecting dots?
Yeah. So all of us, so the same life skills class that they go through, we go through.
You go through. Okay.
Yeah. So in some cases, we'll go through it with them. Okay. So I'll even like refresh sometimes and like go through a class again. And then like, you know, each student has like counselors too that are on staff and on call. So like we have meetings with them to learn either specific things about that student or just different skills that come with those things. So we are actually getting like crash course in like social work.
For sure.
For the most part. I've learned how to, I've wrapped wounds. I've dealt with panic attacks. We've dealt with domestic situations.
Our chefs could learn something there, the social work aspect.
I know, it's funny. It would be helpful. Yeah.
I mean, we've come a long way. We're definitely not a place where people are, you know, swearing at each other and throwing pans at each other and knives, but yeah, I mean, just your level of just thoughtfulness, empathy, all that, and making a training moment that's key. That's awesome.
Do you find the students who are going through, and do you call them students? Is that what they're
Between students and residents?
Okay, students, yeah. Residents. Do you feel like for the most part they're compliant because they feel like this is their chance, or are there a lot who fall by the wayside and kind of give up and move on? How is the retention of it?
I'll say it like this. We've had over 450 students in the 7 years we've been open. So that's roughly about like 90 students a year, a little bit under that. And so through that, who've completed the program. We'll have like a cohort of like 4 or 5 students come in at a time. So we layer them. So when a group graduates, we're not left with no students, or we're starting with a whole new grouping of students.
Train 100 people.
So out of those 4 or 5 students that start off in that cohort, 3 of them will probably graduate on average. But even the ones that may not finish or graduate the program because they realize it's not a fit for them, or they're, you know, not in the right place yet to be at that part in their recovery, they filter back in. They can also, unless they have some sort of like violent or legal reason of where they can't come back, they can come through the program as many times as they want. We've had a couple people who have graduated the program a couple times because, you know, it's not linear recovery. You know, your stages of life. And like I said, most of them have been in recovery for 20 plus years. And then it's like a year they're with us, and yeah. things don't just get fixed like that.
Nothing goes in a straight line. That is, yeah. that is for sure.
No, but I love that grace and understanding of allowing people to come back and just saying, yeah, sometimes it takes more time.
Yeah. And yeah. So, yeah. So, we do see it's usually the roughest in the beginning, like being in a new space, new people. So we get the ones who don't talk a whole lot or just on guard and defensive. But a lot of those residents that come through are the ones that like are bought in the most towards the end of that six months
yeah.
when they see how it's been working, when they built that trust with us. I mean, their whole lives have either been built on being manipulated or manipulating, more than likely both. Mm. So when they see that, like, oh, no, these people are honest about what they're trying to do. They actually care. Are they telling me something I don't like or don't want to hear? Yeah, but they are doing it for the betterment of who I am, because I see the outcome of these other people ahead of me and what they're doing now.
Yeah, they're totally relearning like how humans are, and, yep. and that you can trust some and grow and build. That's just incredible. Okay, so tell us about, with Community Matters, if someone out there wants to support you all, what is the best way to do that?
One, come and eat.
Come and eat.
Come and eat. Come and have a cup of coffee.
That's the easiest.
That's the easiest. One, become a member of our Friends of the Cafe.
What does that mean?
Friends of the Cafe is a donation tier. So like we have this whole chalkboard in the cafe where if you donate over $1,000, then you get your name on the board. But also we make sure that that money specifically goes into certain parts of the things of the rescue mission of need. So taking care of $1,000 that took care of specifically the students' stipend or took care of their bus passes. Or took care of their like clothing needs or their food, things like that. So that's one of our bigger ones. But we also do have volunteer opportunities for like the events. We do a lot of events throughout the year. We do a 5K. We do a clay shoot. I do different dinners throughout the year. So mm-hmm. A lot of us may not have the funds to donate something. Donate your time.
Right.
Right. I still donate my time with other nonprofit organizations around the city.
Of course you do.
Well, he's actually joining us this year at the Giving Kitchen dinner over at Supperland. So here, this guy's always giving back, but he's giving back again for that. He'll be one of our handful of chefs over there.
Very excited
for the dinner. It's going to be fantastic. It's such a fun event.
Yeah, but the easiest is just come and eat. Just come and eat.
Just come and eat.
Yeah. Always in awe, always humbled, and always feel like I need to do more after talking with you.
I know. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story. You really, for us and for, you know, others out there, not just in food and beverage, but in any organization where you see a need and you look at things differently and you're making gigantic community impact. So thank you.
Thank you all.
All right. Well, that was such a treat to have him on.
Tremendous.
It just blows me away how many different difficulties he has, because I know staffing for us can be such a challenge to begin with. And then you throw this whole other thing where you're helping along recovering addicts and people are trying to make a massive shift in their lives. And that's his every day.
It's let's take a super really hard business and make it harder and put all these obstacles in our way, and then they just crush it.
Yes. Yeah. And it is what those folks are learning in terms of food and the skill set and everything. But I really believe, I believe this with our kids too, the idea of raising your expectations. If you can raise your children's expectations, if your children think that they're A students, they're probably going to aim towards A. They might get B's here and there, but they're going to aim there. You know, if your kids expect themselves to be educated or to work hard or to show up on time, those expectations are huge. And
I liked how he was talking of just, rewiring how they're, communicating with society and their expectations mm-hmm. from their coworkers, and that people there are truly there to help, and they are trying to teach them those skills and not trying to take anything from them.
Especially after 30 years where there is that, that word manipulation, where it's them manipulating others, others manipulating them, distrust and, people not showing up, not having integrity. And then you have to relearn all of that.
Yeah.
And
it's so cool. And so many follow-ups I think we should have with them. And wait, we should go get some coffee over there more.
It's time for us to go get some lunch and some coffee over there. Well, thank you all for listening today. We love talking all things food and beverage with you all. And today was a treat kind of getting to hear that the difference that somebody could make in our community using restaurants. So please like, comment, subscribe, follow along. We would love to hear from you and follow along with Fork and Hammer as well. We're over on YouTube now. We've launched there. So please watch the program over there, and we'd love to hear from you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.